Welcome back to Feedback. You're on air, Town Square, here on the Voice of Berks and Beyond, 830 WEEU, where our phone numbers are 610-374-8800 or toll-free, 888-401-0459. And right now, I'm honored to have on with us today Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, who represents the 6th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania. That covers almost all of Chester County and, I believe, the southern part of Berks County and the city of Reading, too. Congresswoman, thank you for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you on with us.
Thank you for having me. It's nice to be here.
So now you, let me go over some of the committees that you're on. You're on the Committee on Armed Services, the Subcommittee on Military Personnel, the Subcommittee on Strategic Forces, and the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, and you're also a ranking member on the Defense Intelligence and Overhead Architecture. Did I miss anything there?
I am also working very actively as well on a group that's called the Quality of Life Panel as well, Military Quality of Life Panel, but that's actually all of the activities that I am undergoing while I'm in Washington, D.C., yes.
And you're a former U.S. Air Force officer, so we thank you for your service to the country.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And as such, let's talk about, you talked about the quality of life panel. So what, can you share with us a little bit about that and what that's all about?
Sure. This was a panel that was put together by Speaker McCarthy at the time and Leader Jeffries. Don Bacon and I, Representative Bacon and I, Republican from Nebraska, Democrat, of course, myself from Pennsylvania, we both were put on this panel to try to think very hard and long about the quality of life of those who serve us in uniform. We wanted to make sure that we were addressing issues of pay, issues of spouse support, making sure spouses were able to be employed if they wanted to, childcare, as well as housing. So all of the issues that, you know, motivate people to enlist and then to stay active duty are the things that this panel was responsible for understanding. We put out a report about a week or two ago now as a result of that effort, and that report will then be rolled into what's called the NDAA, which is the National Defense Authorization Act. And the NDAA happens every single year, but this year it will be focusing a great deal on this quality of life panel's work.
Speaking of quality of life, one of the issues that we talk about frequently on this show is the fact that there are a lot of veterans who are homeless today.
Mm-hmm.
What's being done? Is there anything that Congress is working on to help alleviate that problem that is a growing problem in this country?
Yes, it's an issue as well as there are a lot of veterans who struggle with mental health issues as well. And so it is our responsibility in Congress to think about these issues and to make sure that we're taking care of those who have served and fought for us. And so there are certainly a lot of efforts ongoing, both with the Veterans Administration as well as with our local VA hospitals, to make sure that veterans in our community are properly housed and cared for and have proper access to health care, including mental health services. I did work extensively on a piece of legislation that focused on veteran suicide. We still lose about 22 vets a day to suicide, which is intolerable. And so this is something that we need to make sure that we're aggressively looking into. And not all veterans, frankly, are within kind of driving distance, so to speak, of a VA. So we want to make sure that we find them where they are. And so this piece of legislation was focused on making sure that people had a warm handoff wherever they were in whatever communities they are. As an example, my brother is an Army veteran, and he lives in Iowa, not very close to a veterans hospital. And if he were to need any sort of care at all, it would be hours and hours for him to get to a hospital. So we want to make sure that veterans like him are able to access care and access, you know, accommodations, as an example, wherever they happen to live.
Ms. Houlihan, you recently hosted a ceremony in your district. It was a Silver Star ceremony, if my memory serves me right. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, sir. It was actually a fabulous story of a man, Captain Liss, who served in Vietnam. My father also served in Vietnam. But Mr. Captain Liss's story is fabulous. He ended up saving, I think, 87 people as he came in with his helicopter to rescue them from fire, from a line of fire. He returned, I think, five or six separate times to evacuate his comrades. And it's nearly, I'm now 56, so 56 years later, he was finally awarded this Silver Star. It took years and years and years of fighting for that recognition for him, but we were really honored to be able to pin that award on him in the last couple of weeks.
And is he a resident of Chester County or Berks County? Which one?
Yes. Yeah, he's a member. He's a resident of the 6th Congressional. He's a resident of Chester County.
Gotcha. Okay. And I want to ask you a couple of questions about what's going on in Congress today, or maybe what's not going on in Congress.
Sure.
For a number of years now, here's another issue that we've talked about on this show. For a number of years now, Congress has relied on continuing resolutions to fund the government. And that's resulted in both parties blaming the other of potentially shutting down the government if they weren't able to work out an agreement. My question is, why can't lawmakers come up with a budget prior to the start of a fiscal year?
Yeah, you know, that's the $64,000 question. We would all be, we all try to figure out why that can't happen. And I guess what I would answer is, I never ran for anything before running for Congress. I never was involved in politics in this way before coming to Congress. And what I've learned since coming about 5 years ago now is that there are 435 members of Congress on the House side and, of course, 100 on the Senate side. And we all are, for the most part, you know, independent contractors, for lack of a better way of describing it. We all serve our communities. It's our responsibility to serve the people who brought us to Washington, D.C., but that means that we don't all find solutions in the same way, and we don't all think that the solution is the same. And so I think we've ended up kind of struggling because of a lot of things that have gone wrong in Washington to find our way to being able to fund the government properly. And to your point, that what properly means is that there are 12 appropriations subcommittees. We should have 12 appropriations bills, and they should be passed individually. But what has evolved over time now is, as you mentioned, what's called a continuing resolution, which is when we can't come to an agreement on what those appropriations bills are, and then also large, you know, packages that are multiple appropriations bills. We just passed one a couple weeks ago that was for 6 of those appropriations bills. And this is the art of the compromise. You know, we have to get together and we have to agree in order to move forward. And that's kind of frankly where we are right now, is these large mega buses or mini buses of appropriations packages. I'd love to see us get back to regular order and to getting it done in the proper way, but it would require a lot of change in terms of people's mindsets and mentalities and the strength of each individual committee and each individual appropriations chair.
I'm talking with Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, who represents the 6th Congressional District here in Pennsylvania, which covers most of Chester County and the southern part of Berks County, as well as the city of Reading. Congresswoman, you were first elected, what, back in 2018, if my memory serves me right?
Yes, sir. Yes, I was sworn in 2019.
And over that time, has your opinion changed at all about Congress at all? And if so, in what way?
So as I mentioned, it's a really complicated place. I really would very much like to see it work better. I spend a lot of time trying to make that happen. I serve on something called the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is a group of Democrats and Republicans who try to find the moderate, middle, and pragmatic solutions. I founded a group called For Country, which is a group of Democrats and Republicans who are of service, who've worn a uniform and who work together, although not ideologically aligned. We understand it's important to work together. I also work on a bipartisan group that I founded that focuses on paid leave. And so I think what I would say is Washington is broken as you see it from the television stations and journalists and the newspapers and radio stations you listen to, but there is still quite a lot of good things happening that are bipartisanly happening that you don't necessarily hear about because it's not, you know, it's not interesting, it's not click-worthy, it's not, you know, kind of salacious. And so I would point people to look for those things that are working, things like the Problem Solvers or things like the Paid Family Leave Working Group or things like the Quality of Life Working Group for Military Personnel. Those are things that are working and that we are moving forward on.
I want to talk a little bit about your Republican colleagues, and I'm glad to hear you say that there's still bipartisanship down there in Washington, because what we read in the news or what we hear in the news seems to indicate that you've got the left and the right and they're not communicating with each other. So it's refreshing to hear that there's still some form of bipartisanship going on down there. But I'd like to get your assessment of your Republican colleagues and well, for lack of a better word, the debacle of choosing and keeping a House Speaker. How has that impacted the productivity of this session of Congress?
Significantly. I think that we have historically voted several hundred times, every 2 years or every session on bills, and a couple hundred of those bills end up becoming law. Right now, we're only about 9 months away from the end of this 118th session, and I believe only a couple dozen bills have actually made it all the way to the president's desk for signature because they haven't been able to get through the House and the Senate and of course, then to the president's desk to be signed. And that is, I think, one of the most historically low productivities of any Congress. It really does hamper us. What I would say, however, is there is a way to get out of this. And the way to get out of it is what's called the suspension calendar. And not to get too wonky on you on this, but what a suspension calendar is if the speaker feels as though he has two-thirds of the votes of the body, he can put something to the floor without having gone through the Rules Committee, and it will pass. And so what I would say right now is there are several bills that I know of that have those two-thirds votes that this speaker can put to the floor. One would be the aid for Ukraine and Israel and the border, the southern border. I know that would get two-thirds of the votes if it was put to the floor right now. And so this is a way that this speaker can, you know, make things happen. And I know that he does it at his peril from his right flank. But we have been clear as moderate Democrats that we will help him help, you know, us do our jobs if he is able to put those kinds of things to the floor for a vote.
Speaking to Mike Johnson, what do you think his chances are of surviving, or is he going to encounter the same fate that Kevin McCarthy had, do you think, or no?
So I'm not sure how it will all play out. My guess is, honestly, if I were a betting person, I would say yes, he will keep his job. And the reason why I say that is I think that there are people who would like to see the House work, and I put myself amongst those people. I want to see us vote on things that matter, and if this speaker has the courage to put those kinds of things on the floor, I know that it will upset, you know, his far right, the party's far right, but I know that there are quite a lot of pragmatic, moderate people in both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party who would like to see this body function. And so I would like to say, and I've asked the speaker personally, you know, please understand that you're the speaker for everyone, not just for the Republican Party. You're the speaker for the entire body. And he himself has personally said that he thinks the House should do the will of the people and the will of the body. And the will of the people is there for him to put these bills forward so we can vote on them. And then I believe he will likely keep his job. And if he doesn't, you know, frankly, we should all be willing to lose our jobs over principle and doing the right thing.
I'm talking with Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan. Ms. Houlihan, you recently secured nearly, $12 million in federal funding for a couple of projects in your district. Can you go over that with us, share with us a little more detail?
Sure. Every year we're allowed to submit a certain number of projects to those appropriations committees that I was talking to you about. We solicit input from the community. We got more than 40 ideas from our community. We have an independent board of folks who from all over our community who evaluate those proposals and rank them. We submitted 15 of them, and were able to get 14 of them approved all the way through the process and funded. And they represent anything from the Reading Area Community College, Albright College, to fire stations, police stations for cameras, and other sorts of things that will help our communities be more safe. And it ended up about $12 million that we were able to give directly to our community. So I'm really excited about that.
One of the things that I understand you're very passionate about is national service. And in fact, did you not recently host a town hall on that subject?
Exactly. So what we try to do, and I want to also make sure people know that we're having our 85th town hall 2 weeks from today, and the 85th town hall will actually be a telephone town hall, and it will be covering immigration. But the town hall that you're speaking of was an in-person town hall, and it focused on national service. I really believe that national service is essential. I think wearing a uniform, serving your country in that way is one way to do that, but also there's many ways to serve your nation. I also happen to teach for America with the AmeriCorps organization. And I believe that that's something that makes our community stronger, but also makes an individual stronger, too, because they have the chance to be exposed to people they wouldn't normally be exposed to and wouldn't normally work with. And so I very much am a champion of making sure that people have access to more opportunities to serve this country.
You said the upcoming town hall is going to be on immigration, which leads me to another question here. We've been hearing for years now that our immigration laws are broken. Do you agree with that? And if so, why are they broken? And why hasn't Congress been able to fix them?
They are broken. I'm very, very fortunate that my dad actually was a refugee and an immigrant to this country when he was five. He came here with his mom, who also survived the Holocaust, the two of them. And so I very much believe in that this is a nation of opportunity, a nation of the ability for my dad to come here as a five-year-old and end up being a very successful naval captain, as well as a very successful business person, and contributed to this country significantly. We need more people like my dad. We need more opportunities. We need to make sure that we're continuing to be that nation of promise. But we also need to make sure that we have a secure borders, both our southern border as well as our northern border, as well as air, those kinds of and shipping and freight all need to be stronger, tighter. I think what I'm most frustrated by, and this is another good example of what should come to the floor for a vote, I very much believe that the bill that was passed by the Senate that talked about this issue of immigration reform and border security would absolutely pass if it were put on the floor of the House of Representatives. And so every 10 years or so, it's my understanding we come really, really close to solving this issue, or at least trying to solve this issue with new legislation. And we came within a hair's breadth of being able to do it a couple few months ago. But that piece of legislation is still alive. It still has the opportunity, if Speaker Johnson has the will, to put it to the floor to become the law of the land. And it will help our border, and it will help make sure that we have more people who are able to come to this country and be able to contribute to its growth and to its success.
I want to talk to you a little bit about foreign policy. Many members of your party aren't happy with the Biden administration's support for Israel. Where do you stand on the Israeli-Hamas conflict?
So first and foremost, I believe that Hamas is a horrible, horrible terrorist organization, and I believe that they need to be removed from the playing board, so to speak. I believe that what they've perpetrated upon the people of Israel is heinous and reprehensible, and I believe that Israel should have the ability to defend itself and to respond to Hamas's brutal attacks. I also believe that we need, as Americans, to make sure that all of the aid that we're providing to Israel, to Ukraine, to Taiwan and in Asia, and to make sure that we are appropriating that properly and that it is going to the purpose that it is has been designated for, and that it goes with the following of the law of war, the kind of engagement, rules of engagement. And so it's my responsibility as the person who provides oversight on Intel, the Intel Committee and the Armed Services Committee, to make sure that that oversight is happening for the money and the resources that we as Americans are sending to Israel, to Ukraine and to other places in the world, that they are being properly accounted for and properly used.
There was a story that we shared on the show earlier today about Senator John Fetterman and his position on Israel that has led to the resignation of a number of his key staff members. And it seems like there are other members within the party who are growing dissatisfied with Fetterman's position on Israel. Do you have a stand on that? Do you have a position on John Fetterman? And if so, what is it?
Yeah, I don't actually. In fact, I wasn't aware of that. I spent the last week actually in Korea. So my guess is that those kinds of things were happening while I was immersing myself in Korea and meeting the president, as well as the foreign affairs minister, as well as the Defense Department minister. So my guess is that that sort of thing happened while I was gone, and I really don't have much of a comment on that.
All right. As far as Ukraine is concerned, do you believe the House will approve aid for Ukraine when you folks return from your holiday recess?
I believe so, and I hope so. I have, as I mentioned, had a very personal one-on-one conversation with Speaker Johnson, imploring him to bring that piece of legislation that's already passed the Senate to the floor. A reminder that piece of legislation includes Ukraine aid as well as Israel aid, as well as aid for Asia and humanitarian aid for both Ukraine and Israel and Gaza. He indicated to me that was his intent, that when we return to Washington next week, that we would be voting for that aid. And so I believe him at his word. I believe him to be a good and honest man, and I look forward to voting for that package.
We're talking with Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan this morning. Ms. Houlihan, the GOP House leadership last week sent a letter to President Biden inviting him to testify during their impeachment inquiry. What are your thoughts on the impeachment effort that's underway now?
I got to tell you the truth here. This is just politics at its worst. I think that we as a body, the House, have huge responsibilities to govern and to legislate. And that is not to, pursue, and this goes for both sides, spurious accusations that there's no there. And I think it's just an enormous distraction. I think it also weakens the kind of belief that regular everyday Americans have in the institutions such as the Congress. We need to do our jobs, and it needs to not be a circus. And some of these things are just circuses. And that's one of the things that's most frustrating to me in service in this particular job right now.
In your estimation, do you think the Republicans really want to be in charge of the House?
Yes, I do believe that the Republicans really want to be in charge of the House. And there are good people who are working hard to do good things on, both sides of the aisle. What I would say is that there are some in the Republican majority who I think would be better off were they in the minority. I watch, when you have the opportunity to watch a vote, and I would encourage people to do so, I watch the voting board and watch kind of a subset of the Republican majority, maybe 20 to 25, who vote no consistently on everything. And I just don't really understand why you would want to serve if there's nothing, literally nothing, that your party, because you're in the majority, does that pleases you. There's nothing that you're voting yes for. I question why you would run for office at all if you don't believe in this government and this nation.
One thing something else that we talked about on this show earlier today was a controversy that happened over the weekend where the president announced that Transgender Day of Visibility would be recognized on Easter Sunday, even though Transgender Day of Visibility has been on March 31st for what, the last 15 or 18 years? And people were taking notice of the fact that the president didn't change it since it fell on the same day as Easter this year. Do you have a position on this? And if so, what is that?
So I am very much a supporter of the LGBTQ community and very much believe that we need to protect some of the most vulnerable members of our society. And in some ways, in many ways, the transgender part of our community really takes an awful lot of abuse and heat that I believe is undeserved. I don't really know. I was sort of vaguely following as I made my way back to the country that this was a controversy. My understanding is that it was at an historical day that the transgender awareness fell on that also happened to coincide with Easter. And as we know, the Easter moves every year. My understanding is that this particular date doesn't. But that's just my vague understanding of what was going on. And I very much believe that we ought to support every person in our society. I think that that's what good Christians, good Jews, and good Muslims, as well as people of all faiths, should do. That is, I think, part of what makes us a special nation as well, is that we care for everyone.
I just have a few seconds left. If you want to, again, share with the folks your upcoming town hall meeting, how people can sign up to participate in that.
So the next town hall will be a telephone town hall, as I mentioned. We try to make sure we do a town hall at least once a month, and we move it around the community, both in Chester and Berks counties. This one in particular will be telephone, as I mentioned, and you can find that information on my website, which is houlihan.house.gov, and my last name is spelled somewhat unusually. It's houlihan.house.gov, and this town hall will be 2 weeks from today.
Congresswoman Chrissy Houlihan, thank you so much for the time you shared with us today. I do hope you'll come back on at a future date, too.
I appreciate you very much. Thanks for that opportunity.
You're welcome. Have a good day now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. We'll be back with the final seconds of feedback on this Monday in just a bit. Stay with us.
It's the topics that matter to me.
A new generation of talk. News Talk 830 WEEU.